Welcome back to Irish On Tap, brought to you by the On Tap Sportsnet and presented to you by Manscaped. If you're looking for the best manscaping products on the planet, go to manscaped.com and browse their awesome selection. The Lawnmower 3.0 brings you 7,000 RPMs of skin-safe technology so you don't nick, cut, or scrape those sensitive areas. Want to keep your boys fresh all day? No problem. Go and pick up the ball toner and ball deodorant so you're fresh all day long. Go to manscaped.com and use promo code ONTAP to get 20% off and free shipping on all your manscaping needs.
And there's a magic in the sound of their name. Here come the Irish of
everyone, and welcome back to Irish on Tap. I'm your host, Brandon Suarez. You can follow me on Twitter at BDon300. Today, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Brian Mishler and Ethan Wiles. We're going to break down the college football playoff. Obviously, we did not have a post-game recap after Bama, so we'll get into a little bit of that, some of the other matchups, and then the whirlwind of transfer portal subtractions, and then the big addition that we were able to land in since the last time that we talked. But first, let me check in with my co-host, Brian. Brian, how are you today, man?
I'm doing well. I mean, obviously, Notre Dame didn't get the ending result to their season that we all hoped. But honestly, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that they'd go into the CFP ranked fourth and lose to Bama by 17, I might have taken that just because they're not really on Bama's playing field right now. We kind of all know that. And largely, they had a very successful season.
And Ethan, how about you, man?
I'm good. Obviously, a tough loss. I think that after we had talked about just how good this team was and the chances they had, but it sucked. It sucked. But you know what? The way that Alabama just rolled Ohio State last night, I don't feel bad.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So, I mean, let's unpack this. It's very polarizing. I've been motherfucking people on the internet all day about it because there's still some narrative that people don't think that Notre Dame belonged. And, like, Brian, I think you put it perfectly when you tweeted from the account the other day what you tweeted, where it's like, dude, there's blowouts every year in the CFP. Just because your team gets blown out, and 17 points is not even a blowout. Like, I know there was a late touchdown, some crazy cover the spread magic at the end of the game. Shout out to Notre Dame bettors. That was a lot of points to cover. But it's ridiculous that this narrative only surrounds Notre Dame when it happens to them. Because if we go by the metric of if you get blown the fuck out, you don't belong, there's only one team that belonged in the college football playoff this year, and that was Alabama. It's because they didn't lose. Clearly, no one blew them the fuck out. You look at, you know, the Texas A&M comparison, and let's just squash it right now, okay? We have two common opponents. We have North Carolina, we have Alabama. We, outside of the first 8 minutes of that North Carolina game, thoroughly dominated it without our defensive captain. They, on the other hand, although if you're just a box score guy and you read the scoreboard, yeah, same margin of victory. But if you watch that game, North Carolina was in that game until about 6-7 minutes left, and I believe it was a 4th-and-1 in their own territory that they got on the drive that they were trying to go in and tie it that ended up making it a 14-point deficit. Then you take the Bama game. Brian, I think you were the one who found the box score tweet that put them both side by side when it was Alabama, Ohio State, and Notre Dame and Alabama. And then I also even looked at the Texas A&M and Alabama one, okay? We played Alabama tougher than anyone did this entire season. And I don't want to look at it like, yo, we're not moral victory guys. We're not participation trophy guys. But Notre Dame belonged in that college football playoff this year. And the narrative surrounding big blowouts needs to change because it's so clear, like what you said earlier in the episode, Brian, that the difference, this isn't a Notre Dame problem. Like the difference is Alabama is just so much better than everyone else. It wasn't a Notre Dame problem this year.
Yeah, and to go off your point about North Carolina and Texas A&M, North Carolina had a shit ton of opt-outs. I believe both their running backs, Javonte Williams and Michael, I believe the other one's name is Michael Card. I believe both of them were out. So, like, it was the same margin of victory for Texas A&M / Notre Dame, except Notre Dame actually played North Carolina at full strength. I think them, Texas A&M, finishing above Notre Dame in the final ranking is complete bullshit. But, I mean, it was kind of to be expected. If Texas A&M would have gotten in and would have gotten killed by Alabama, Notre Dame probably would have jumped them as well. But I think the biggest reason why people have this narrative against Notre Dame is not only that Notre Dame is a polarizing brand, and obviously there's going to be hot takes from people all the time because everybody wants them to lose or wants them to win. You either love them or hate them. But it's also because Notre Dame has gotten blown out in both the times they've been to the CFP, quote unquote blown out, because I didn't think they were blown out by Alabama. But the rebuttal to that is Notre Dame played the 2018 Clemson team and the 2020 Bama team and were blown out, quote unquote, by both of them. But both of those teams had the highest margin of victory of any national title game in this college football playoff era. So, I mean, they arguably played two of the greatest teams in college football in that 2018 Clemson team and this 2020 Bama team in the first round. So they just got shafted by their first round matchup because they just played absolute behemoths. And going off to your point that Notre Dame's just not on Alabama's playing level, those are just the facts, and it's not, like you said, it's not a Notre Dame problem. Alabama destroyed everybody this year. They just put up points at will. Ohio State looked really good and couldn't have looked any better than they did against Clemson. And what do you know? They still get their door stomped on by Alabama. And I think there's just a huge problem in college football in that three teams are kind of heads and shoulders above everybody, and Notre Dame's just got really their backs against the wall to trying to close that gap. And I think they've made some real strides in the past 4 or 5 years, but it's going to take some more elite recruiting classes and some better coaching. I think Notre Dame got outcoached against Clemson and Alabama, so that can't happen if they want to beat those elites like that. They got to execute flawlessly, like we said in the pregame. They didn't. And you're not going to beat a team like Alabama when they have damn near 6 first-round draft picks.
Well, you saw that last night, too. Like, I mean, it was a pretty – it was 21-21 at one point, I believe. So it was a close – it was tied at one point up until the second half, and Alabama just – and even then, like, Devontae Smith in the first half, Ohio State was still playing with them. Like, I feel like Bama could be beaten. Like, I don't think that they're, like, that – you know, they're above everyone else. Like, obviously, yeah. You know, they have the better talent. 3 out of the top 5 Heisman finalists. It's going to take a lot to beat that football team and that kind of football team. And Ohio State couldn't do it. Notre Dame couldn't do it. No one else could do it. That's what I feel like is going to – it's been the trend going forward. But at what point you have to ask yourself, when is this run from Alabama going to end? Like, will it ever end? Like, are they the New England Patriots of college football?
Yeah, and I mean, the word dynasty instantly comes to mind, but, like, the thing that – I guess the thing that pisses me off so much is just, like, there's no parity in college football, Brian. You alluded to it a little bit, and I don't know how we get to a system where there's more parity, you know, similar to college basketball, but the system is broken right now. And I understand we tried the BCS. We tried all these different ways, but there's no reason or no way – that you can explain, and I'm not going to get into, like, tinfoil hat, but, like, how the hell does he get the best players every single year, get them to play at their best performance every single year? Even taking a guy like Devontae Smith, who wasn't as high on many people's, like, rivals or 24/7 sports or whatever BS metric that they use to measure these 17, 16-year-old kids before they get to college. They just somehow find a way every single year. And like you said, Brian, probably six first-round draft picks similar to LSU last year. Like, it's tough to beat that talent, and it's especially tough when the coaching is at a disadvantage. And they did add is his name Mark? It's Marcus Freeman, correct? The defensive coordinator from Cincinnati as the new defensive coordinator for Clark Lee, correct?
Yeah, Marcus Freeman. Awesome hire. We can get
awesome hire. Yeah, we'll get into the hire here in a little bit, but for the first time in my Notre Dame life, I was, like, sitting there, like, what the fuck is Brian Kelly doing, and, like, is he ever going to be able to get that win? Like, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I have been, you know, wearing a red cape and an S on my chest for Notre Dame for, like, the last 3 days, still defending this team and the 2020 team and why they belonged, and that's, like, one of the most toxic, but I think best parts about college football, because there's always that debate. There's always that conversation. But this team, through conference play, through the win against Clemson, through the win against North Carolina, through the we literally had COVID cases on our team and our season shut down, earned it. And I really just want to see them take that next step. It's so frustrating to see them get to this level several times in our lifetime, but just once we get there, the door gets shut on us so fast. It's really frustrating, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is incredibly frustrating. And to touch on your first point, I think about the talent disparity, I think the CFP has had some really, really negative unintended consequences because it has devalued every other non-CFP bowl game to the point of NFL potential draftees are just opting out. So there's really no national exposure to playing in a non-CFP bowl game. So when you have Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama getting to the CFP probably 3 out of every 4 years on average, they miss the mark probably 1 every 4 years, fine. But why would you not want to go to those three programs if you're there for 3 years, you're going to get to the CFP twice, you're going to get on national television on the biggest stage. And hell, if you start for one of those teams, there's a good chance you're going to get drafted. So I think the CFP needs to expand to get other teams more national exposure. Hopefully that would, in theory, spread the talent out. And I really think this one-time transfer rule is going to help a lot. I think Notre Dame should be targeting the second stringers on Ohio State, Clemson, and Bama, because if they're not happy that they're not going to start, that's where Notre Dame could come in and get some really elite talent to start next year. But to go off your point about Brian Kelly, I agree that they did completely outdueled against a Clemson team that didn't end up being very good, in my opinion. Like, Ohio State just tore them to shreds, and I don't know why Notre Dame couldn't put up more than, I forget how many points they put up. But I think the big overarching point is that Notre Dame's offense is one-dimensional, and it has been under Ian Book, love Ian Book, but let's face it, he's not a guy that's going to throw 50-yard bombs and air raid it across the field for 4 touchdowns. He doesn't do that and can't do that against a team like Bama, Clemson, Ohio State. So I think, yes, Brian Kelly got out coached, and they were not ready to play against Bama at all. In the first 8 minutes of the first quarter was freaking embarrassing. But I do think Notre Dame needs a more dynamic offense if they're ever going to win a national title. And love Ian Book to death, but he's just not a guy that can throw the pigskin like Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, and the Bama's QB could. But yeah, I don't think Ian Book, love him to death, but I just don't think he's got what it takes to throw the ball all over the field like Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, and any of the other guys in the CFP, and even Joe Burrow last year. If you're going to win a national title, you got to be able to throw it deep at will, and that's just what it takes. And hopefully Notre Dame figures that out in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it worked out for a while that we were able to run the ball so well. It worked out that we were able to run the ball so well in the first, you know, the ACC play and things like that. And even the first game against Clemson, it worked. But you know, like you said, Brian, it came down to being outcoached in the playoffs. And, you know, obviously we were able to be the better team in the regular season against Clemson, and teams were able to figure us out. But like you said, we got to figure out how to be better next season offensively. And it starts with the quarterback position, and definitely an interesting change.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, there's a lot of changes on the horizon for the team. Before we get into the change at the quarterback position, let's go to some of the key subtractions, because like you said, Brian, the transfer portal is probably about as popping as it's ever going to be with the instant eligibility rule for players. So we knew this earlier in the season, but the players available in the transfer portal will start at the top. Running back Jameer Smith, he had, you know, stepped away from the game of football a little bit earlier in the season. He decided he wants to come back out on the field. He'll be eligible to play wherever he wants to play next year. Also lost running back / receiver Jafar Armstrong, who saw a significant downturn in his snaps with the emergence of Chris Tyree and Kyren Williams. Never truly really found his new role in this team. He did a little bit of work kick returning and punt returning. Sure, that's a guy that'll find a home here real soon. Offensive lineman John Olmstead has transferred to Liberty. Another offensive line transfer is Colin Grunhardt over to Kansas. Lost a couple people on the defensive line in Jamion Franklin, who will be transferring to Duke. Kofi Wardlow, who will be transferring to Charlotte. Two linebackers as well in Jack Lamb and then Ovie Ogofu. And then the defensive backfield, Isaiah Rutherford, Isaiah Robertson, and Jordan Jenmarkeith. Jenmarkeith announced earlier in the year that he'll be going to UCLA. And then Isaiah Rutherford has already announced that he will be transferring to Arizona, the former four-star recruit. So as far as that goes, we kind of knew that that was going to happen coming into this season. And then I'll throw one more loss in there with Tommy Tremble declaring a year early for the draft. So where are you guys at with, as a lot of guys, take me through where you're at with the losses here on the team.
So I don't, on the offensive side of the ball, I don't really think we lost much. No disrespect to those players, but like you said, they just didn't really find their way with the Notre Dame offense. And I don't think Notre Dame's going to really lose anything besides obviously Tommy Tremble. That's a hit, but he probably left because he figured Michael Mayer's only going to increase in his production as a sophomore and might as well go to the NFL now when you can. So, I mean, I don't disrespect that at all. I probably would have done the same, honestly. But on the defensive side of the ball, Jack Lamb is going – I don't know if he would have started next year, but it's definitely going to hurt depth at the linebacker position. It's a little frustrating because he was a really top-level recruit. He was a top 100. Wasn't a five-star, but one of the better linebacker recruits Notre Dame's had in the last five or so years, and he just never really developed into that type of talent. The biggest loss for me, I thought, was Isaiah Rutherford, just because he was also a really talented guy, top 100 recruit, not a five-star, but top 100 in football is very good. And he was going to compete for a starting job next year with Nick McLeod leaving. So that one, I think, hurts. I originally thought that maybe it was about him being homesick and trying to move further home, but I believe he's from California and transferred to Arizona. So clearly wasn't the case. So not sure why he transferred, but I do think that's the biggest loss because you can never have too much depth at DB because you can have to go six deep in any given game. So that's pretty much where I'm at. Jack Lamb and Isaiah Rutherford hurt the most, in addition to Tommy Tremble.
Yeah, those are obviously names that we're going to miss. I think one guy that I had really kept my eye on from the time that he was recruited to Notre Dame was Houston Griffith. And it's a guy that had seen the field a couple of times over the last couple of seasons, but obviously, you know, the emergence of Kyle Hamilton kind of affects that defensive backfield. So I could kind of see that one. But that one's tough. I felt like he was going to be a playmaker, and I know he will be wherever he ends up.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, we're going to lose guys to the draft, but that's the cost of doing business when you're a part of Notre Dame football. Put about five guys in the draft at least every year. Definite first rounder with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. And I really honestly feel like he's the number one linebacker in the nation. Micah Parsons, you sat out this year. I don't understand what you're doing with that move, but Owusu-Koramoah proved week in and week out why he deserved the butt kiss and why he got it at the high school and college level, similar to Manti Te'o, so, and similar to Jalen Smith. So I don't know. Every 4 years, there's, you know, there may be an election every 4 years, but every 4 years, 2012, 2016, and 2020, a Notre Dame player has won the butt kiss. So I know we talked a little bit of superstition before the last game, Ethan. You brought up what was it? Liverpool, the Lakers, the Dodgers, all these random teams that won. And then Notre Dame was the final one. Unfortunately, we did not finish that.
Yeah, that one is tough. You can only hope on superstition and those little things for so long. But, man, just Alabama just doesn't – they deserve all the credit. It's an insane team what they were able to put out on the field. And just to see them score so easy in both the playoff games, Notre Dame, and then the national championship, it's just – like, whatever Saban has in his mind, like, that's just a football dude. I can't imagine that dude thinking about anything else in his day but football.
Yeah, he actually smiled last night, too, so that was...
not big.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, that was pain. But, hey, Brian, you put it the best, man. Smallest margin of victory was against our Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the team that nobody thinks belonged. But you guys did also bring up another great point. So we've talked a lot about the quarterback position. We've seen, you know, Drew Pine come in a couple games, Brendan Clark a little bit. A lot of hype surrounding Tyler Buechner. But Brian Kelly and the guys went out there and nabbed a former three-star and Big Ten quarterback in Jack Cohn from Wisconsin, who is 6'3", 190, threw for over 2,000 yards last season with Wisconsin, which if you guys watch any Wisconsin football last season, it was about 98% Jonathan Taylor, and then if you had a job on that team, you would fall in line afterwards. So those numbers are a little deflated due to the fact that they were about a 70-30 run-heavy team, but a great addition to this team, especially after losing our all-time wins leader in Ian Book. So what are your guys' thoughts here on this monumental move for the quarterback room?
It's tough to kind of evaluate if Notre Dame thinks he's the clear-cut starter now, because we obviously don't know, like, who called another first. Like, if Cohn reached out to Brian Kelly in Notre Dame, then they're just like, hell yeah, come for some depth. We don't know if you're going to start. But if Brian Kelly and them reached out to him, that probably means they're not very confident in Drew Pine or Brendan Clark or obviously Tyler Buechner, because he didn't even play high school football last year, so I highly doubt he's ready. So if Brian Kelly initiated that recruiting or anybody in Notre Dame staff, I think it probably means that Jack Cohn's the favorite to win the job next year, but that obviously doesn't mean he's going to win the job. He's the only one with real college experience. I would be surprised if he doesn't win the job, I'm not going to lie. I mean, we haven't seen much of Drew Pine. Pretty much have seen nothing with Brendan Clark, so they could be good. We just don't know. So I think it just depends on who initiated the recruitment of those two. I mean, it's entirely possible Jack Cohn was like, Ian Book's leaving, I'm going to go call Notre Dame and try to compete for a starting job. I mean, that could have happened as well. It doesn't always have to be the university initiating it first, but I would be surprised if he's not the starting QB for Notre Dame next year.
And if he is, I'd really be interested to see what the relationship is between Tommy Rees and himself. I mean, not really the relationship. I mean, I think it'll go well, but more or less just like the development of Tommy Rees into Jack Cohn. Like, it's not, you know, a guy that you've been working with for a few years now. You know, it's a guy that has been in a different system and in a different program. And now you're talking about bringing him in and making him your starting quarterback. So definitely will be interesting. And I think that Tommy Rees factor will help Jack Cohn no matter what.
Yeah, and I think one of the most important things is, too, and I'm going to sound like an asshole in saying it, but the kid can definitely hand the football off, and you know Notre Dame wants to run the football. So I feel like as much as we want to see, like, a Trevor Lawrence type or a Justin Fields or a Joe Burrow type, Jack Cohn is more of the Ian Book type, where he can still throw the ball, but he doesn't have an absolute cannon of an arm. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I really do think that the one thing that we haven't talked about much on this podcast, but we have alluded to, is just like we've been at the top level at every other position, whether you talk about receiver, you talk about linebackers, you talk about offensive, defensive linemen, linebackers and DBs. That one position that we haven't seen Notre Dame at the top at over the last 20, 30 years is quarterback. And that's the most important position on the field. And if Notre Dame can find a quarterback that whether they're a five-star or not, once they get here, they play to the level of a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields or a Joe Burrow, then we'll be cooking, because all the other, you know, pieces are in place for the most part every single year. It's just like, if you really look at it in our lifetime, our top two or top three best quarterbacks, Kizer, Quinn, and Book. And it's like, Quinn, we know, had his physical limitations. Kizer was probably the most unpolished, but he left a year early, and that ultimately ended up being the downfall for him. And then Ian Book, you know, he's leaving this year in a weird year, a COVID year, but he'll probably be a late round draft pick and at the very least be a backup on an NFL roster next year. So it's not like we're bringing in number one and number twos at quarterback.
What's incredibly frustrating though, Brandon, is that it doesn't, like, obviously Trevor Lawrence was a five-star, I believe, like the number one prospect in the country. He wasn't expected to be as good as he is. But that, like, it doesn't take a five-star. Like, Mac Jones, looking at his recruitment, four-star, 160th in the country. Like, why can't Notre Dame get somebody like that who's outside of the top 100 and develops into a Heisman candidate? And it's just frustrating because, like, it doesn't need to be somebody who's a five-star recruit. Like, I think Brian Kelly is the big – I love Brian Kelly. I think he's a top five coach in college football. And I think the big game he sucks in big games narrative is overblown. But the one thing that he really does struggle with and is by far his biggest weakness is he doesn't really develop QBs that much. Like, Ian Book, I would say, got a little bit better, but he was largely the same QB in 2018 as he was now. I mean, he had the same weaknesses against Clemson as he did against Alabama. He did generate better pocket presence as he aged, but it wasn't like he improved a shit ton. Same thing with Kizer. He probably should have came back, but we don't know if Brian Kelly would have improved him at all. And then Malik Zaire, Brandon Wimbush, like, those guys were pretty prolific talents out of high school. They didn't get any better at QB than when they first started. So, like, I think that's Brian Kelly's biggest deficiency, and I hope Tommy Rees can circumvent that weakness and develop some of these guys, because Mac Jones is a guy Notre Dame could get whenever they wanted to at 160th in the country, and they just haven't been able to not only get one of those guys, but they haven't been able to develop them. So it's very frustrating because, like you said, Notre Dame's had elite talent at any other position besides QB, and you think QB would be one of their easiest to recruit towards, but it hasn't been.
And I'll circle it back to what you said about Jack Cohn having the most experience. I mean, I think that ultimately will help those younger guys. You talk about Drew Pine, Brendan Clark, Tyler Buchner, those guys that are young guys. They need to get that atmosphere. And I think all the practice reps in the world will help. But with a guy who has experience coming in from the Big Ten, you know, it's something that, you know, we just talked about on our NIU podcast. You know, a guy that is coming from the Big Ten has really good experience. You look at the teams in the Big Ten, very good defenses. So Jack Cohn, I think, will help out this quarterback room, and whether it might not be this year that we see those younger guys, maybe next year, who knows. But either way, I mean, the experience is always nice to have there. And, you know, for our fellow Bears fans, you know, I think you see that a lot with Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet too. And I think just anytime you get a veteran in your locker room, that it helps.
Yeah, and I don't know if you watched the Bears game on Sunday, Brian, but that personal foul penalty on Cole Kmet, like, that ref should be fired, bro. That shit was fucking egregious.
I think I watched some of the game, but I'm not a huge Bears guy, and it's tough to watch an offense like that after watching Notre Dame struggle.
Dude, Lucas asked me the same thing. He goes, how the fuck do you watch Notre Dame and the Bears, like, in the same weekend and still live? It's tough, dude. Throw NIU at 0-6 in there. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Pain factory. But, hey, I'm glad that, like you said, Brian, I think you put it perfectly at the very beginning of the episode. If you were going to tell us when we all sat back here in August and we recorded the first episode for the second season of this podcast, talking about players, depth chart, all that stuff, I don't think any of us really actually thought, without just, you know, the lip service saying it, that we were going to get to this point and get to the CFP. I'm super proud of the way this team performed this year. And I know, again, we're not moral victory guys, but they are trending in the right direction towards where they need to be a college football champion. Like, it's been a long time since they've been there. A lot has changed. I think Brian Kelly is still the guy. I think adding a guy like Marcus Freeman to that coaching staff is great. I really want to see Tommy Rees take a great giant leap in year two. And if this kid Cohn has an arm, I want to see it on full display, and I want to see him ball out over 3,000 yards next year. So we'll see what happens. But do you guys have any wrap-up thoughts here before we close out the episode?
One final thing is, I think Cohn, he doesn't have a Trevor Lawrence cannon, but he's got a stronger arm than Book. I know that, and it will be interesting to see if Tommy Rees can adjust the offense in, I don't know, like 7 months until next season to adjust it to Cohn's strengths, because he doesn't have Ian Book's mobility either. They're honestly kind of like pretty polar opposite QBs. I mean, obviously they're going to hand the ball off, like you said, Brandon, but I don't think they're very comparable in terms of what they do in the passing game. So I agree, what Tommy Rees does this offseason to adjust the offense to Jack Cohn will be monumental to Notre Dame's success next year.
I think there's a lot to look forward to. Obviously the season just ended, but with everything that happened, everybody that is coming back, everything that there is to love about Notre Dame football, it's coming back Sunday, September 5th against Florida State. I'm already looking forward to it. There's a lot of games on this schedule next year that excite me. USC comes back to South Bend. The Jack Cohn revenge game against Wisconsin at Soldier Field is going to be good. Cincinnati as well. So this team will have very good opponents on their schedule next year. It's time to get to work. Time to get us back in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, and we can finally shove Cincinnati in a locker in the middle of the season so people won't think they're an actual CFP contender at the end of the year.
Agreed. That's a big game. It's Freeman. I forgot. Yeah, that's huge.
The Freeman and Kelly Bowl, too. Yeah, so I have a very hard time believing we're going to lose that game with that being said.
We got the Jack Cohn revenge game and the BK Marcus Freeman revenge game back-to-back.
Hey, I did take a look at the schedule, and I do think it's a favorable schedule. We'll see where we're at talent-wise next year, but they really got to start trying to put the speed on the edge and get that quarterback that we talked about, because those are a couple of the differences that have made that difference, and some of it comes down to coaching. Some of it comes down to recruiting. But the fact of the matter is, you know, Notre Dame was right there all season. They competed. They were in the college football playoff. It didn't go our way. And, you know, they'll be back next season. One final thing before we wrap up. Brian, why don't you update us on the shit show that is Notre Dame basketball?
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I expected them to be competing for a tournament bid, their own 4 in the ACC, and just don't look like they've improved whatsoever from last year. Like 3 years ago, I was probably the biggest Mike Gray supporter there was because they were coming off back-to-back Elite Eights and were in the ACC championship game against Duke when they had Bonzi Colson and whatnot. They were firing at all cylinders at a program level, but they are in colossal shit show right now. They're going to probably be a bottom feeder in the ACC again, and I honestly think Mike Gray should step down. They're never going to fire him. Jack Swarbrick would never fire him, but I think Mike Gray just needs to step down. The program needs to change.
Yeah, and honestly, I've been watching a little bit of it here and there, and their offense just looks so stagnant at times. I think I can never pronounce his name right, but Leshewski or Leshewski, I can't pronounce it right here. Leshewski, he's been playing good. Goodman's been playing well. I haven't seen a lot out of Prentice Hub that's been too promising this year, but yeah, college basketball has been wild this year, and it is what it is, I guess. And then our guy too, Austin, Blackhawks DAZN on Twitter, covers the hockey team, and he does a great job in doing that. So if you're interested in Notre Dame hockey coverage, he usually puts out a preview or a recap article for every game, and he'll keep you guys in tune with that. With that being said, we really do appreciate everyone for tuning into this episode and tuning in throughout the season. We saw a tremendous amount of growth. We were happy to have you along for the ride. We're going to keep putting out episodes not as frequently as before, but as the draft starts to heat up, a lot of our guys will, you know, start to pick up steam. We'll put out some articles around the combine time to give you guys a feel on where they'll go. And then obviously we'll keep you posted on basketball, hockey, and any sort of transfer news. It was an amazing episode of Irish on Tap. You can follow my co-hosts on Twitter at Ethan_Wiles10 and at Brian Mishler. You can also follow our main account at On Tap Irish or myself at BeatOn300. One final note, go ahead and check out our friends over at Manscaped. Use promo code ONTAP to receive 20% off and free shipping on your order. But we got nothing else for you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and go Irish.